to the book of Mark, chapter 5. Book of Mark, chapter 5. Read verses 21 through verse 24. When Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, that is from Gadara, following the exorcism that took place there in Gadara, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. Behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. And then in verse 35, and the verses between verses 24 and 35, of course, we have the woman who had the blood hemorrhage. She, as this multitude is making their way to the house of Jairus, she comes, and she was miraculously healed, as we've already seen. And then this scene with Jairus picks back up in verse 35. While he yet spake, that is, while Jesus yet spake, what he said to the woman whom he had just healed, while he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain, there were some individuals which said, Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said unto the ruler of the synagogue, Be not afraid, only believe. And he, Jesus, suffered or permitted no man to follow him, save Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeth the tumult, and them that wept and wailed greatly. And when he was come in, he saith unto them, Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn, but when he had put them all out, he taketh the father and the mother of the damsel, and them that were with him, and entereth in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand, and said unto her, Talithai cumi, which is being interpreted, Damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years. And they were astonished with a great astonishment. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat. Now, again, as they cross Jesus and the apostles, as they cross back over the Sea of Galilee, there's a multitude who were waiting, waiting to receive him. And we see that Matthew, Mark, and Luke all call our attention to one particular man in that multitude. That man, of course, being Jairus. We saw last week his position. He was the ruler, one of the rulers of the synagogue, which means that he was a prominent man. The very fact that his daughter is referred to as a damsel means that she was of noble birth. So he was a prominent man. He certainly had a high social position. He was a man of prestige. He was a man of power. He was a man of influence. He no doubt was a religious man. He belonged to the religious elite of that day, whom, of course, were at war with Christ, and of whom Christ had absolutely nothing good to say about. Christ never said a commending word concerning the religious organization, if you will, of that day. So we see his position. He was also a man with a very great need. He had one daughter. She was 12 years old, and she was sick, so sick that she was about to die. In fact, Matthew records that Jairus said she's dead already. In other words, she's as good as dead. There's nothing we can do for her. The situation is hopeless. So he was a man who had a very great need. He was also a man, of course, who sought Christ in the midst of this multitude. And considering his position, ruler of the synagogue, considering the attitude of the religious people of that day toward Jesus Christ, their hatred and their opposition, it took courage for this man to publicly come to Jesus Christ and publicly plead with Christ. In doing so, he was risking everything. He was risking his position. He was risking his standing. He was risking absolutely everything. And of course, he did not really care, because at this time, the need that he had overwhelmed everything else and overwhelmed all the possibilities that could happen. So he comes. And we want to consider today, we want to see him as he comes to Christ. And in this, we see how you and I are to come to Christ, you and I that are saved. We also see how that a lost sinner comes to Christ. But there's a lesson here in truly coming to Jesus Christ. We see, first of all, that he came in great humility. Notice in Matthew chapter 9 and verse 18. While he spake these things unto them, behold, there came a certain ruler and worshipped him. Matthew is the only one who says that, and worshipped him. That tells us much about the spirit of Jairus. It tells us much about the heart of Jairus. He came in a worshiping way. And if you think about it, really, truly, that's the only time that we truly come to Christ, is if we do so as a worshiper. He worshiped him. What this means is that he came with a spirit of humility. He came and he took his proper place before the Lord. You cannot worship without humility. You cannot worship without taking your proper place before the Lord. So he worshiped, and he was humble. Mark and Luke both say in Mark chapter 5, verse 22, and in Luke chapter 8 and verse 41, that he fell at his feet. He fell at his feet. So we have this ruler of the synagogue, man who holds a high position in the religious community, and he comes and takes the place of the lowest of servants. And no doubt when this multitude of people, many of them knew Jairus since he was the ruler of the synagogue, when they saw him fall at the feet of Jesus, this had to be cause great wonder in their minds. So he comes and he takes the place of the lowest of servants. He comes and takes the place of a needy creature. And he was not ashamed to do so. Again, and this is why Matthew, Mark, and Luke all say, behold. They all use that word, behold, when drawing our attention to Jairus, because this was not a common everyday thing for a man of this position to do what he did. So he was not ashamed to do so. He was not ashamed to fall at the feet of Christ. He is not ashamed to be seen with Jesus Christ. So he comes in humility. He comes with a burdened heart. You can hear the burden, you can hear the concern, and you can hear the care in his words. Notice again in Matthew chapter 9. Matthew 9 and verse 18, the latter part of that verse says, my daughter is even now dead. My daughter is even now dead. There's a great burden. There's great heartache in those words. Mark chapter 5 and verse 23. Mark 5, 23. He says, my little daughter, and she's 12 years old, but he says, my little daughter lieth at the point of death. He comes in humility. He comes with a burdened heart. This leads to the next thing. He came as a pleader. He came as a beggar. Notice again in Mark 5 and verse 23. It says that he besought, that is, he begged and he pleaded. He besought him greatly. That means he begged and he pleaded earnestly. And it says, and I pray, and besought him greatly, saying, my little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, that is, I beg thee, I plead with thee. Luke 8, verse 41 says that he besought him. Now, when a person begs or pleads, they realize that they are at the mercy of another. They are at the mercy of another. And there's no better way to come to the Lord than to fully realize that you are at his mercy. And this man came and he begged and he pleaded on behalf of his daughter. He realized that he was at the mercy of Jesus Christ. It was a prayer that proceeded from the realization of his need. Most people today, and I'm talking about God's people, don't even realize their need. If they did, they would do what this man did. But many do not realize their need. He came with a need, he came with affection. He came with affection for his daughter, with love for his daughter. And he came with a very specific prayer. Matthew 9, verse 18, we read, come and lay thy hand upon her. That was specific. He presented the specific need. My little daughter lieth at the point of death. He made a specific request. Come and lay thy hand upon her. Mark says in Mark 5, verse 23, come and lay thy hands upon her. And Luke says he besought him that he would come into his house. So it was a specific prayer. It was a specific prayer that had its basis on a specific need. There is far, far too much random praying. We have specific needs, and we are to make specific requests. It was a prayer of faith. Notice in Matthew chapter 9, verse 18, he's made a specific request. In Matthew 9 and verse 18, the very latter part of that verse, lay thy hand upon her, and she shall live. If you would just lay your hand upon her, she shall live. He had faith. He had faith that there was power in the touch of Jesus Christ. Notice again in Mark's account, Mark 5, verse 23, about halfway through that verse, he says, I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her. And then notice, that she may be healed, and she shall live. Now there's two things there, but again, it shows his faith that she may be healed. That is, that the sickness will go away. Lord, I know that all you have to do is come and touch her and the sickness will go away. And the result of that will be she shall live. She shall live. He realized that the problem was really not that she was dying. The problem was the sickness that was bringing death. And so he said that she may be healed. If you heal her, she won't die. So again, he believed that Christ could heal her. He believed that Christ could enable her to live. In other words, he believed that Jesus Christ was able. So this man came to Christ, and his coming to Christ is a lesson to all who will truly come to Christ. Now, after he made his request, notice Matthew 9, verse 18. Matthew 9, verse 18 and verse 19. While he spake these things unto them, behold, there came a certain ruler and worshipped him, saying, my daughter is even now dead, but come and lay thy hand upon her, and she shall live. And Jesus arose and followed him, and so did his disciples. So they began to make their way to the house. Now, Jairus has told Jesus here in verse 18, my daughter is even now dead. She wasn't. But in his mind, again, she was as good as dead. Mark and Luke record that she lieth at the point of death. And then, of course, later, someone came from the house and said she's dead. But this gives us the mindset of Jairus. There was no time in the mind of Jairus. There was no time to wait. There was no time to delay. So they are headed to the house. And I believe that Jairus is going to walk as fast as he can possibly walk to get to that house, because in his mind, we don't have much time. We do not have much time. Now there's this multitude of people, and they all begin to follow Christ. They've heard what has been said. They are now anticipating that Jesus is going to do something, that Jesus is going to heal this girl. And some, of course, probably thought, oh, I want to see if he can. And so this crowd is headed to the house. Now, when you have a big crowd walking together, progress is being slowed. And we see that this was so because the multitude, we're told by Mark and Luke, thronged him. It is, they pressed in upon him. This was slowing the whole process down. Now imagine, again, Jairus is in a hurry. He's got to be almost going nuts at this point with the procession being slowed down. And I'm sure he's thinking, people, back off, back off. We don't have any time to spare. This is an emergency. We've got to go, we've got to go. We've got to get there quickly. He's in a hurry. And I'm sure that he viewed that whole multitude as an intrusion and has a disruption at a very inopportune time. I'm sure this is what was going through his mind, because that's what would go through almost all of our minds. But the Lord, he knows what he's doing. He's never in a hurry. Never. In fact, you don't even need to hurry the Lord along. He's not in a hurry. He knows what he's going to do. He knows when he's going to do it. But I'm sure Jairus is thinking in his mind, I just wish these people would back off. We have got to get to the house as quickly as possible. And I'm sure the whole situation was very exasperating to Jairus. Very, very bothersome. Because this crowd, in his mind, is disrupting the progress toward his house. And I believe as the crowd was going to the house, it was probably growing as they went, as news began to spread. Jesus is going to the house of Jairus. His daughter is sick, about to die. We think Jesus might do something. And the crowd, no doubt, would grow. So in the mind of Jairus, this seems to be a disruption. But as we read down further, and as we'll see, this disruption really was a test of his faith, and it would be used to strengthen his faith. How many times we look at things as interruptions, and they may interrupt, no doubt they do. They interrupt our plans. They interrupt our desires. But do they interrupt the plan of God? No. Because God does everything on time. And we've just got to have the faith to believe that, the faith to know that. And if we could look back on some of the things that in our lifetime we have considered major disruptions, If we would look back and carefully examine, we might find that some of those so-called disruptions were for the best. And during some of those disruptions, God used those disruptions to show us some things. And God used those disruptions to strengthen our faith. And I believe we have here a very good example of this. So there were disruptions. There was the disruption in the mind of Jairus that the multitude of people was slowing the progress toward the house. At no time did Jesus say, "All right, folks, back off. I'm in a hurry." Find one place in the Bible where God even implies that he's in a hurry. He just does what he does. He's not constrained by time. And that's something that we have a very difficult time with, because we live, of course, and we can't help it, we live in the confines of time. But God doesn't. And the Lord here is not in a hurry. Could you imagine, and this is how people tend to think, I mean, it sounds ridiculous when you put it the way I'm about to. When the people came from the house of Jairus with the news, Jairus, she's dead. Could you imagine Jesus turning to that multitude and saying, "If you folks wouldn't have slowed me down, she'd still be alive"? Now, when we look at it that way, so that's ridiculous. Yes, it is. But that's how we think. When we get in this attitude, "Oh, we got to hurry. We've got this small time frame of God's blessing, and if we don't honor this, if we don't get this done, it's all over." No, it isn't. Because God is in control. And this is beautifully illustrated here. The next interruption was a major interruption. And that is with when the woman who became a part of this multitude, she comes with her disease, and she brings the whole procession to a halt. I mean, they're not just moving slowly now. Everything comes to a stop. And that's where we'll pick up next week. And it's that interruption that I believe we can show that the Lord used to strengthen the faith of Jairus. Let's look to the Lord.